there, I'm Barbara Turley and you're watching another episode of Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from change makers, world shakers and wealth creators. So far on the show, I have had all three of those types of women, amazing women out there doing amazing things. And today I'm continuing my Balinese trip with my interviewing women over here. And I have a total change maker with me today. Please welcome Margaret Barry to the show.
Hi, everybody.
So Margaret is the CEO and founder of the Bali Children's Foundation, which is absolutely an amazing philanthropic effort that's happening here in Bali around the education of children. So Margaret, to kick off, tell us a little bit about the foundation and what the work that you're doing here in Bali.
Okay, Bali Children Foundation, our mission is to educate disadvantaged children in Bali and to educate them. And by disadvantage, in our case, we're looking at poor and remote is our main category of disadvantage.
Yeah.
So on that basis, we work in North Bali and in West Bali, where there are really big pockets of poverty, particularly in the hills, which are dry as well as poor soil. And
there wouldn't be as much tourism up there, of course.
That's correct.
Yeah,
there's particularly in the West, there's virtually no tourism in the area we're in. In the North, it is developing, which is helping our sustainability programs. But so the aim is to get children in these dry, poor hills educated. Yeah. And to that end, we've got to the point where we've developed scholarships for over 1,000 students. I mean, currently we have 1,000 students at school or at university on our scholarships.
Yeah.
And we work in children's homes, but our primary work is in communities.
Yes.
So we're working directly in two children's homes. We support another three with projects as and when they need assistance.
Yeah.
And we're working in over 30 communities throughout North and West Bali.
That's fabulous. And I mean, the foundation has been in operation now for, what, 15 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
14 years, yeah.
And I know, I mean, obviously, you're also a female entrepreneur, so we also have female business owners.
Yes, I'm in the fashion business. Yes.
So you're in the fashion business. So tell me a little bit about, so your entrepreneurial journey or business ownership journey, you weren't always a business owner. So tell me how you started out in the fashion industry and where it all started.
Well, I started in fashion in the mid-70s, and very soon I was in India working for a company, which at that point was quite small, but later became very large. And as that company grew, I had the incredible opportunity to grow with them and always be in a very senior role in that company. Mm-hmm. That company was called Malika. And we went from being a little company of a couple of 100,000 turnover to by the end of the 80s, we were turning over 10 million. And that was very significant.
In the 80s in India, that is massive.
Yeah, and I was the senior executive in the company.
Yeah.
My boss and I ran the company and, you know, we topped and tailed between Australia and India.
Mm.
But I was pretty good at Asia.
Yeah.
And I was running the design and marketing side of the company. So developing collections and also overviewing production. So I ended up spending most of my time in India during that period based in New Delhi. Yeah. So I was employed by that company. It was an extraordinary growth process. So I had the opportunity to learn the industry very well, both from the design, which I had no background in originally. And I started off with designers working for me. And as time went on, I became a little more hands-on in that regard. And but it was also a very important management role because we were talking obviously big numbers going to department stores, etc. So there was a lot of logistics work involved and just plain program management because these are the days before internet or
we were working with
a telex machine that had a punch tape that ran through it. So if someone fell over, if you had a long message, the tape could be, you know, 20 metres long. If someone fell over the tape, it was like, oh, my God. And we've got to try and put it back together. And you've lost a whole paragraph of your message while you fix it. And we were working with a five-hour time difference. I mean, And we were working with incredibly dodgy electricity. I mean, it was
it makes us realize how easy it is to
miracle that anything ever happened, let alone this extraordinary company developed. Yeah. And it developed because there was a team of extraordinary people.
And then you moved to Bali after that.
Yes.
Was that Bali?
I decided to start my own business because I was starting, I was in my late 30s. India was very dangerous. It was a time of real terror. Mm. And we were working at a phenomenal rate. And I figured that if I didn't get out and do my own thing, I was going to spoil my energy, and I'd have not, you know, I'd be a burnt out wreck and wouldn't be able to do anything at all. So
you know what's funny about that, actually, I mean, although you were working in India at the time, I know there's a lot of women out there feeling that way who are in the corporate world right now, and you know, we get into our mid-30s and we start to think, oh my god, is this all there is? I'm just going to end up this bitter, exhausted, overwhelmed woman. You know, you sort of lose. And I was talking to Zoe Watson, who has the Bliss Sanctuary here, about this problem recently. And she was saying the same thing. We end up sort of losing our feminine side a bit, or we end up losing our feminine energy to this sort of overwhelm and burnout. So this is what brought you to Bali. Why did you choose Bali?
Okay, I chose pragmatic. Our market was Australia. I knew the Australian market. I couldn't do India because the company I was working with was so huge, they would have smashed me if I'd even had an attempt, even looked sideways at their market. And they were huge quota holders, so I needed that friendship. I needed their quota. So there was no question. There just wasn't an option to do India. So I needed to take my expertise somewhere where it would be of some value. So Asia, I knew how to do Asia. I'd done 15 years already. I'd opened up other markets as well. I'd opened up production in China, Hong Kong, and been involved in other, you know, investigations. So I sort of figured out,
that
you know, they used to say, there was a saying in the company, if you want to do something, you just send Mark to the town, and in 3 days, she's got something started for you. And that's, you know,
that
I ended
was
up
your
selling in London, and that was kind of my thing. I could do it quite well. So I thought, okay, Bali's great. It's only 5 hours from Melbourne, which is where I was going to be based. It's relatively inexpensive and very quick. Only a couple of hours time zone difference.
Plenty of motorbikes, as we can hear.
Plenty of motorbikes, but a pleasant place. And, you know, why not have a place that's a bit more ambient for a change? Because India was
tough.
Many things, but it wasn't ambient at all. So I came here under the misapprehension that it was a reasonably benign business environment, because India was a quite tough and heavily regulated business environment, and I thought that this one was going to be less so. In fact, not true.
Was it? Yeah, because I'm interested to know.
It was incredibly difficult. And
I think a lot of women would have this perception as well. I know there's women out there thinking, I'd love to just move to Bali and start a business, you know, or move to in Thailand and start a business. But it's not that simple.
Well, these days it's much easier because these days the regulation process is quite clear. And if you want to come and open a business, you can, as long as you're prepared to go through the processes. But those days we still had Suharto in power. He was the dictator president at the time. And as soon as you got into anything that was vaguely lucrative, suddenly there would be all these obstacles put in front of you. And if you interview any of the Westerners who've been here, you know, 20-plus years, you'll hear this repeated as a story. Some of them had much more challenging run-ins than I, but you just couldn't make a buck. Didn't matter what you did, you just could never quite get there. And then in 98, we had a big financial crisis that went throughout Southeast Asia and resulted in a complete change of power in this government, in the Indonesian government. And at that point was the beginning of a democracy and the beginning of some opportunity for small and medium businesses. And
how did you get through those early years? I mean, what made you stay? So you came, there was this, you couldn't make a
buck. Absolute dogged persistence.
I'd
got used to living in Asia, and I really didn't want to live back all that much in the West. I preferred living in Asia, so I was happy to be here physically. I certainly considered going back and getting in paid work. That was something that had to be considered on a number of occasions. I had very good support from my family. They helped me through more stages than they probably like to think about. But they did.
They were there.
They were there for me. And I had a very good supporter here, a guy called Agul Sutama, who's a local lawyer.
Yeah.
I'd met him like the first week I came to Bali.
Mm.
And when I think of all the absolute idiots that I could have met, including some of those who've been recently interviewed on what really happens in Bali, I was very lucky. You know, he's a guy who's always had my back and been very good
to
me.
And he was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer. He was a law student at that stage.
Right,
he'd gone back to finish his degree. He's now a lawyer. He's the chairman of the Bali Children Foundation in Indonesia.
Ah, okay. Because what's really fascinating about that, and what I love about that particular part of your story, is that a lot of what I coach women business owners into thinking about is that you need to have, I call it your dream team, but you need to have a few people on your support team.
Yeah.
You need a really good accountant. And you know, if you're somewhere like Bali, I think a really good lawyer or a legal person is very important.
So the legal side is more important than the accounting side.
Yeah.
The accounting side is certainly very important once you're going.
Yeah.
And a real challenge here, one that I'm still dealing with on a daily basis.
Oh, really? But so there's any amazing accountants out there that want to move to Bali.
A new saviour.
Yeah.
It's called Xero software.
I know. I'm using Xero. Please, anyone out there, use Xero. It is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm not being paid for this. It's
Xero is fantastic. Xero.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant software.
And the great thing about Xero is that they've got a marvelous support team.
Yeah, they do.
24-hour support team.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're actually setting up Bali Children Foundation on Xero at the moment.
Yes, brilliant.
And, you know, it's really hard because the staff always, in any situation when they've been using one system, they will come up with so many objections as to why it won't work. Well, you can imagine in Bali, where we've got multiple currency, we've got half-trained staff, we've got everything else going on. The objections are humongous.
Mm.
But the Xero team have been able to work through those objections and we're getting it. It's going really well now.
Yeah.
And as soon as we've finished and we've caught up with, so that we've got it on another system, which is similar to Mile, but it's a local system.
Yeah.
So we're running them, of course, in tandem for this year. But as soon as I've got them balanced and working together, absolutely in tandem, I'm putting my business onto Xero too.
Yeah.
It's great.
And just so, and you mentioned your team there. There's another thing I'm really a big fan of. I mean, obviously in a business like yours, which is the retail business, you need to have teams of staff and people.
Yes.
But obviously you're pretty good at, I think a really important part of business is learning to lead your team and inspiring them to sort of take control of things.
Well, one thing you have to learn
and get
here
on with, you know,
is you've got to learn to mine your opportunities because the situation.
I think that's anywhere though.
Probably.
I mean, in some respects, you have to hunt your opportunities
out. You've got to mine your opportunities.
Yeah.
And this applies to MAG on one hand, but it particularly applies to Bali Children Foundation.
Yeah.
Because now when I look back, I mean, we haven't built 1,000 scholarships and the big education programs we're doing in the communities for English and computer studies and teaching the kids how to go out and get themselves jobs. That's called Work Ready. That's another whole part of our program.
Good, yeah.
And it works really well.
Yes.
Just a little bit of a skite. We've just had 69 kids graduate year 12. And when I say just, I mean literally 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And 60 of them are already employed or accepted at uni. So we've got 9 to go. I mean, that's in 3 weeks.
That must just light your heart up. Is that what lights your soul up?
Well, it makes it much easier to get support from the communities because they can see their kids going out and being employed and bringing in real money where these families live on. Like, our average family lives on $30 to $50 a month.
Wow.
And one of their children going out as a graduate. This is a high school graduate, not uni graduate. One of the kids going out as a graduate is going to bring in between $80 and $120 a month. So the
which
change...
Which is still so nothing, but for them it's 4 times
the change to that family income is just humongous.
Mm.
And it totally changes the life of that family. So as long as we can get the kids jobs, the families will... Because we help, you know, we're helping with... school fees and uniforms and books and special training and all of that. But the parents have still got to feed the kids.
Yeah.
And these children traditionally dropped out of school at grade 6. In these communities, in our communities, we look at 35 to 65% dropout at grade 6 primary school as the norm.
So really they have no benefit from going to school at all then, because really the 6 years...
Well, they're literate.
Yeah, but
that's
it. And
they can speak Indonesian, because remember their primary language is Balinese.
Oh, so they're totally...
So they have to learn to speak Indonesian to get into the main workforce anyway. So they've got those advantages. But, you know, with our program, they can go on and do very well. The trouble is that the parents have got to keep them at school another 6 years.
Mm.
When you're on $30 to $50 a month and you're feeding your whole family,
even
if it's only a family of four, and plenty of them are more than that, it's a huge thing to ask. So we need to be able to prove that we can deliver. And fortunately, our performance does prove that. So we now have absolutely no difficulty. Our pledge originally was, my pledge to my board was originally that it, within 3 years, I promised we would have no dropout at grade six.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, we have found that it's in 1 year we can get it to zero.
Yeah.
Basically, as soon as we appear in the community, everything changes.
Mm.
And in many cases, because they've been waiting for us to come.
So is there, there's way more communities that you could help now, today? Because, I mean, the foundation's been running 14 years now.
Yes, but we're really just starting to hit our straps volume-wise.
Yeah.
We're at 1,000 now. I hope we'll be at 2,000 in another couple of years.
Mm.
Our estimation, and the stats are really rubbery, even though we can get official stats, they're still a bit rubbery, but my estimation is that somewhere between probably around another 15,000, there's somewhere between 12 and 15,000 that are of children who are out there in the north and the west alone who would qualify for our program.
Wow.
Which means that they're economically deprived, they're in a remote situation.
15,000, 15 times the one you've got already.
Yeah.
And, of course, obviously this, you know, I'm very interested in the money side. So, you know, I'm a firm believer, and the reason I really wanted to get you on the show is I love when I see somebody who's channeling money in the right way.
Yes.
And, you know, you're harnessing money from lots of different areas. So you've got some corporates, you've got some women
corporate
who come to
sponsorship.
Bali.
Local businesses in Bali.
Local businesses are channeling money into this as well.
And philanthropic assistance from Australia.
Yeah.
Significant philanthropic support from Australia.
Yeah. Are those from those philanthropic trusts or whatever, are those funded by businesses or family money or combinations? Do you know?
A combination.
Yeah.
Mostly to do with business.
Yeah.
But there is some situation of family trust as well.
Yeah, which would have come from business or something.
Yeah, it's come from some situation.
So it's this concept of, as business owners, we can really harness what we're doing in business. And if we're making money, then there are areas where we can really channel that money into just creating the next generation of growth for our world.
We can, or even, it's not even so much our own money. It's because most women are not Oprah Winfrey. Most women are not wealthy entrepreneurs who've been very successful and are able to fund their own foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Most women who have got foundations, and I mean, this foundation came out of lessons from the Bali bomb, as did many others in Bali.
Mm-hmm.
We are not unusual. In fact, almost every foundation in Bali has been developed by a member or someone who, probably almost all of them, my friends, who were active in the process after the bomb.
After the Bali bomb.
So it was an experience.
It was an awakening of something.
Well, it was an experience where, in my case, I saw the combination of working with the Balinese community, working with the expat community, and working with tourists who have considerable expertise, enabled us to get a very positive outcome out of what was an appalling tragedy.
Mm.
And it was that formula that I've used.
Yes.
And towards education in Bali, and that's how we work, and that's how we've been effective. So, like, the members of my board have all come from, they're all visitors, they're all tourists to Bali.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And now they may have met me in other ways, like their accountant recommended me back to accountants.
Yeah.
Or one of the doctors that I worked with during the bomb knew of my work and recommended me. So it came through a lot of sources, but all of them are tourists who come to Bali. Many of them have properties in Bali.
And they'd like to give back a bit more too.
And they're interested in giving back. But the fact that they've got a relationship in the society, they know a bit about what's going on here. They're able to know what I do and trust it, and that enables them to be big supporters. But it's not all that. I mean, it's people that I've been known through business for years. Like in the Malacca days, it was the days of ethnic clothing. So there were lots of ethnic clothing businesses around then.
Yeah.
Now, my mates from that period, who were technically our competitors, but they were our friends, virtually all of them are supporting me, either through individual scholarships for tertiary education or through corporate scholarships where they might be doing one or two villages. So, I mean, significant support. So when I talk about mining your friends or mining your resources, mining your opportunities, it's not just about your own money. Yeah. I think certainly in the Bali situation where we're not well off, your money, your own business enables you to give you staff and bricks and mortar and all of those things to get going. So it's that you get a pro bono situation developing that enables you to do what you do.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the rag trade, I've got a lot of staff.
Yeah.
So when I need a big job done, like we distribute goods to the communities every 6 months.
Yeah.
People bring their donations here to the BCF office. We save them up. We've got a big store next door. Mm-hmm. And then every 6 months we get the mag staff in and we lay them out all over the floor in that big front area.
Yeah.
And we break them up into 30 communities so that everyone gets a fair share.
Yeah. So your staff from your business?
My staff from my business come and do that because it's a big job.
But that's a resource too. When I say money, I suppose I mean your
resource. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You have more than
in
money.
In Bali, and I think many women have more than money. Money is something that it's great if we've got. But the other stuff we've got as a business is actually more important. Reputation. Where your business is based. Your staff who can help you. And it's a great way of including your staff in this sort of work usually provides them with great satisfaction.
And fulfillment.
They really enjoy it. So it gives them a life beyond just their work life.
Well, I guess it means that then you're harnessing the resources, all the resources that you have. So you have your business, it has resources in there. And then there's money and then there's your time and passion and there's your family and there's
people you've done business with.
Yeah.
And there's your contact list on Google.
You think about it, and then there's
everyone you know is on Facebook. So there's these enormous, and particularly with modern situations, all these communities.
A question I'd love to know to ask you: if there is someone out there who does have the resources to create a foundation, let's say there's a woman out there who's running a decent-sized business and could create a foundation, or maybe there's a few women together that could create. How difficult is it to create a foundation? Because that's something I think is a new area. It's not a new area, but it's a new
Australia problem. I can't really comment on, but I can comment here. Well, I can talk about Australia. If you're interested in doing something in Australia, have a look at what's already there and try and partner up with someone.
Yeah.
Because there's thousands of organisations, some of which are good, but need different kinds of expertise. If you can find something that's existing, that's in your field, and that you can find people who are open, because that's important, that would definitely be the way to go. It saves you time. You've already got some traction. And they've already going to have some sort of an infrastructure to help you with.
Yeah.
You can come into that, develop a trust model between you, then get your friends involved. You can move quite quickly. Here, same thing. There's already quite a lot of organisations going. Check who's about. Try and partner up.
Yeah,
I'm a huge believer in partnership.
Because you've got quite a few partnering with you now.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And you can have Australians partnering with you too at the foundation here.
Well, my board are all Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really partner up with any NGOs in Australia, but I do here. We do education, 100%. That's our job. Bali Kids, they're not up there, but they should be.
We'll get some pictures.
Bali Kids... do health. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
And so they do thousands of children in the communities for health. Yeah. They look after our children's health really, really well, which means I'm not distracted with malnutrition issues, TB issues.
Yeah, of course, you can get on with the education.
Skin disease issues, HIV, cancer, or, you know, when you start doing 1,000 kids, all of these things pop up. And if you don't have the expertise to deal with that stuff, it's incredibly time-consuming and just saps your energy.
I was going to say, you probably feel a bit defeated because you start to think, oh my God, I can't make a dent in this problem.
Exactly. So you don't need to do that. You've got, in Bali, we've got Bali Kids, which is a health organisation. They do a brilliant job of what they do. We've got a very, they're well audited, they tick all the boxes, they've got tax deduction, all the things that one needs. And so how we work with them is that through one of our board members, Angela Young, who is the managing director of Straumann Australia, a big international dental company. Straumann want to do things to do with dental health.
Yeah.
So Angela's partnered them up with Bali Kids.
So they
helped set up a big dental facility at Bali Kids.
Yeah.
Through Bali Children Foundation, we pay for the dentist and the dental nurse. And I think this year Straumann are working to develop a mobile van situation, and that's in process at the moment. Then, of course, the request will come, we'll need another dentist and we'll need another dental nurse, and then that'll come back to us. So my board and sponsors are perfectly happy to provide the sort of capital that's needed to do that. If that means that we don't have to worry about our health or our dental care for our children.
And you can get on with
so
educating.
So that is a great partnership. One I'm very
so there are,
with.
Yeah, there's quite a few statements. There's one thing to educate the kids, but actually there are all these other things that can impede their ability.
Yes, or you've got children with disabilities. So that's YPAC, you know. So there are other organisations doing good work here, and it depends, you know, as an individual or as a corporate presence, what you're interested in, then you need to research and find out who's doing stuff in that area. And, I mean, I'm always happy to answer an email if it's a question of pointing someone in the right direction.
Do you feel, because I feel, and you know, it might be just a, I don't know, with a naivety or a hope on my part, but I just feel, you know, there is the money in the world and there is the resources in order to solve every problem that we have out there. How do you feel about that? Do you think,
I think that's totally true.
Yeah, that if we just wake up.
Well, I mean, it's empirically
more,
true.
Yeah.
There's no question.
So if we have more people just waking up to what's possible and feeling like, because I think a lot of people think, oh, well, what can I do by myself?
I think that's a big issue, and that's where. If you're leading a project where mining opportunities is really important. I just wrote an email to my family today about something that came up and reminded me to thank them for something. My sister is a midwife in Traralgon in Victoria. And when I was trying to get kids to go to uni, because it was really hard at the beginning to get anyone to imagine going to university
when
they came from a town that but a district where it was normal for kids to leave school at grade six. So it's a huge thing to ask them to manage to
being
imagine
a doctor
university.
Or something like that,
And like 4 years ago was our first real intake of uni students. We had a couple 5 years ago, but the majority were 4 years ago. So it's taken a long time to get. You know, we've been going 14 years. It took 10 years, really, to get the first decent lot of kids to uni. And I was keen for nursing to be part of it, and I was keen for accounting to be part of it.
Because
I've got a brother who's an accountant as well.
Yeah.
So Nellie, my nursing sister, came up, and she talked a lot about nursing when we were on a project visit. And she managed to do it in a way that encouraged a couple of girls to get interested. So 3 years ago, we put our first two girls into nursing, into Nurses College in northern Bali, in Singaraja. And one of those was funded by my family, Barry Family Scholarship, and another one was funded by another organisation. And then Nellie became friendly with Ratnadi on Facebook. They'd already met. And because Ratnadi's an adult, I allowed them to communicate separately rather than via the foundation. Now, they don't communicate a lot, but enough that Nell has this line of mentoring going back to Ratnadi and her colleague Couture, yeah. who started in that year.
Yeah.
So comes the next year, and I want a couple more to start. Nellie happened to be here for the holidays. We had a big sort of pizza, Coke, afternoon club meeting. Mm. She talked about nursing. The girls who'd done nursing talked about nursing. The next two confirmed they wanted to do it.
Mm.
This year, we've got our next two.
Yeah.
And they're funded by Ishka Shops in Victoria and New South Wales.
Yeah.
And another friend who's retired from the ethnic game, a guy called John Byrne, who had shops called Oja's in Victoria. So the important thing is that Nellie's mentoring on Facebook, modest as it is, has been enough to grow a program where we push to get two girls in, to a program where we've got two girls every year. Now, that sustainability is really important because I need partners to work with, partners again, that word. I need partners to work with on the internship side for these girls.
Mm.
So at the end of third year, they're going to have an opportunity to do an internship.
Mm.
We're working to get a local Western connected hospital to do the internship, and that's BIMC. We're hoping that BIMC will do the internship, which is in July 2015, for our first two nurses. An important part of this work, of developing this, is that I have to have something that's ongoing. Because setting up something like this is really a lot
of
work.
Yeah, not for a one-off, yeah.
They're not going to do it for a one-off. I don't want to do it for a one-off.
Yeah.
But because we've got two girls now coming through for 3 years guaranteed, it's going to be much easier to set up that deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, once we've got to the point of, I feel quite confident we'll have two more next year, and this will be an ongoing thing. So we don't need to ask BIMC to do anything that's a waste of time. All we need to ask them to do is to do two a year, and in that time frame which suits them anyway.
Yeah.
And we've got something to build on. So that the continuous nature of programs is really important.
Mm.
And even though I've got quite a big team at BCF, it's not just me. I've got the two staff members you've met upstairs, Robin and Agnes. And we've got a full team in the villages. We've got an office in the villages similar to this.
Yeah.
We're out of Bunja, which is near Lovina.
Mm-hmm.
And we're running our programs out of there. So we have paid staff and we have voluntary staff. Robin, you met upstairs, is a full-time volunteer.
Yeah.
But, besides that organisational structure, you have to have mates and people to help. You've got to have your supporters.
Mm.
And Nellie, what Nell's done is really, really important.
Because that's gotten this into the sustainability.
Yes, so I was sending the letter out to the family to thank Nell.
Yeah.
And actually to try and get my nieces and nephews interested,
yeah.
because they've all got great degrees and really flash jobs. And I want to start partnering them up with students.
I mean, that's brilliant now, because I was going to say, my next question was obviously going to be, for people watching, how can they, if they want to connect with you, connect with the foundation, get involved? I mean, there's obviously the financial end, but there's the mentoring end as well. So,
yes.
So if somebody wants to sponsor a child or donate to the foundation, first of all, where should they go if they want to do that?
They can go to our website.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of this program, you're going to put up the website
address. Yes, it should be there right now.
Email address.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So they've got those two points of contact with us.
Yeah.
So that is the first point of view. And tax-deductible donations can be done either via emailing us or going directly onto the website. Sponsorships are for a primary child is $200 a year, junior high $300, senior high $400, university
$1,500. Mm-hmm.
Very doable. But we do encourage our sponsors to consider it before they do it, because we hope that relationship will be with the child for their whole education.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the child decides to go to tertiary, there is no expectation the sponsor will take that opportunity on, because it's more costly.
Yeah.
They can choose to, some do, some don't. But we really do look to our sponsors to take the child through to senior high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is it's a commitment and it needs to be thought about.
Mm.
If that doesn't feel right for a sponsor, then a one-off contribution, which can be towards an English program or a computer program, or just general setting up the community project work, would be, of course, very welcome. So that's another
thing.
What
about mentors?
Well,
somebody's interested in doing this Facebook mentorship.
Everyone always asks about volunteers.
Mm.
Now, volunteering is really tricky for us because we're a long way away.
Yeah.
You really need some form of functional Indonesian to work in the communities. The kids have got some English, but mum and dad doesn't have, and it's really difficult if you haven't got functional Indonesian. So volunteering is a bit tricky. You're very welcome to come and visit our projects. We're open. We have an open village day every month, so that's very accessible. If you're in Bali, you can come up and see what we do. But mentoring is much more interesting. And for mentoring, we would have to know the person. They would have to have police clearance.
Yeah.
And they would have to have something to offer that we'd vetted and decided fitted our model. So they, you know,
somebody could email you if they were interested in potentially doing that.
Particularly if they're Victorian.
Yeah.
Where I've got more board members on the ground, because we have to be very careful about how we approach this for all sorts of reasons. Yeah. But a mentoring process is definitely an opportunity. And, you know, it's not a lot of work. It's a question of staying in contact with a kid on Facebook. And it's an adult child, not a child underage.
Yeah.
So it's a child who's already in university. There are certain guidelines that have to be followed. But I'm just discovering how valuable this can be.
And
I hope to
develop
a policy towards this for the future.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Just as another avenue for people to potentially stay, even if somebody is funding it, but also to stay more connected. Because sometimes you give money to these things and you think, I don't even know what's happening.
Yeah. Yet. Well, sponsors, of course, can send messages, but they're sent via the foundation.
Right.
So that they're not... So there's no direct interface, which is just the correct protocol.
Mm.
But... our sponsors also receive letters twice a year from the student, their latest school report, and they know what's going on. They can know what's going on with the child if they choose to. If they wish to communicate,
and
they
can. Visit you
if they wish to visit, they can.
Margaret, thank you so much for coming on the show, because, you know, I really, this is a real element that I want to introduce to the show, is the whole philanthropic thing and just the giving back. So I really, really appreciate your time on the show. Thank you so much, and thank you for the great work that you're doing here.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I've got one final comment
to
make.
Yes, go ahead, yes.
You put out the message that it's important to grow your wealth, to grow your dream.
Yeah.
And I think that is very true, but sometimes the fact that you're doing the dream means you just have to make money to keep the dream rolling.
Yeah.
And that can be a powerful incentive as well. So it's not so much... you know, greed-based or money-based like that. It's just the empowerment you need if you've got a big dream absolutely involves money, and some of it better be your own.
Absolutely. Thank you for just making that comment, because I am very passionate about it. I'm trying to change the perception of money in society.
Mm.
I think after the financial crisis, and, you know, you've got films like The Wolf of Wall Street, and they paint a very ugly picture of money. And I think if we can change the perception of it, and we can channel it in the right way and get everybody dreaming a bit bigger and having bigger visions for the whole world, it's an amazing thing. And we can do amazing things with it.
No doubt.
Yeah. Mm. So thank you everyone for watching again for another week. And I'll be bringing a final episode of Feminine Wealth TV to you from Bali next week with my friend Ness, who has a jewelry business here in Bali. And she's flying it. Thank you, and see you then.